I am very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Jerry Faraccio and Quinn Mander. They are director and co-director of William Shakespeare's The Tempest. They also play, Jerry plays Prospero and Quinn plays Caliban. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Hello, Mary Charlotte. How are you?
Always good to see you.
Good to see you too. And it opened last week. We're a week late, but here we. But the play, it runs through the 16th of August. A very nice long run.
Yep.
For The Tempest, and it's part of the. It's produced by the Santa Fe Shakespeare Society. Now, this is a production of The Tempest that you are doing in what I call sort of. St. John's method. Instead of looking at... no, it's not a good... He's making faces. It's not a bad thing.
Okay,
at St. John's, instead of reading years, decades, and centuries of criticism about the texts, we go straight to the text and work from that. And that's what you're doing with The Tempest. You're not looking at the many ways that it's been produced before, but actually being inspired by Shakespeare, him or herself.
Exactly. We are inspired by himself.
You have an opinion about that?
No, no, not an opinion. Fact. Thank you very much.
Just a nod to those who think that Shakespeare may have been a female. Anyway, so what's that process like?
Fantastic. It's fantastic because there's only one real source for The Tempest, and that's the First Folio of 1623, which we will get a copy of next February here in New Mexico, in Santa Fe. Look forward to that. We're doing all sorts of little playlets and things for that event. So New Mexico, the Museum of Art, is going to have that, and that's very exciting, so look for that. But it's wonderful because it's if not the cleanest text to look at. It is also in the preeminent position. It is the first text in the folio. And it actually has very complicated stage directions, but you know,
which
stage
is unusual.
And the author doesn't usually do those kind of things. Calling Shakespeare an author is really fair because he wrote things to be performed.
Yeah.
But the term playwright really didn't come into being until about 1616, until the year he died. But he was quite the theatrical poet, and it's just so wonderful to delve back into that and remove 400 years of garbage, quite frankly. The Victorians in between and the Restoration and the Victorians in between have really chunked a lot of things into The Tempest that aren't there.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Okay. Well, quite frankly, when Shakespeare wrote this, it was not an indictment against colonization. Colonization was fairly in its infancy at the time, and people have since then seen Caliban as the wounded hero and Prospero as the evil invading European and all sorts of things. If we had 5 hours, I could go over Miranda as Nymphette, Prospero as evil dictator, Ariel as...
Well, there's a number of interpretations of Ariel going from, you know, from the trapped and brainwashed prisoner to, you know, the toady.
Toady and angry, rebellious.
Angry, rebellious, I mean, all that sort of stuff.
When in Shakespeare's day, he was just an elemental. Of course, we're playing Ariel as a woman, which is, you know, fairly common for a whole century. Between the 1700s and 1800s, only women played Ariel. But Ariel is perceived around 1611 when this was written. Alchemy and magic, the study of magic and things like that, they had a very specific idea of what an elemental would be.
Right.
Prospero actually says, "Hast thou, which art but air?" He's just literally a chunk of the element air, you know? And then he's been turned into an angel because of his name, and all this complicated things. And we've just eschewed all that, went back to the text, brought the text to the actors to see what they would bring forward.
Right.
And it's just a whole... It's beautiful. We had people crying last weekend at the reconciliation at the end. And now, you know you've done your job well when you know, people are like, out in the house.
It was
really
that.
Cool. Yes, we
I
love
know.
That.
I know. I cry in theaters all the time, and it's really embarrassing.
And it's not embarrassing. That's what you're supposed to do in theaters.
I hope there's a really long curtain call so that I can, like, compose myself. Yeah. It happens at the opera, too, sometimes.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Well, opera is one of the most moving art forms.
Yeah,
just
but sometimes
it.
it's so
overdone.
Overwrought that, not necessarily the Santa Fe Opera, but...
No,
opera in general.
Yeah, well, so...
And some acting.
and some acting. But so here you are. Now, when you say that Shakespeare included all kinds of stage directions, mm-hmm. are you using those?
Well, in the theater community, we often realize that stage directions are what the first production did, and we are using some of them or taking or riffing on them. But for instance, there's a part of the play where Ariel becomes a harpy to remind three characters of the horrible thing they did that started this whole play off. Mm-hmm. You are three men of sin, and Ariel goes on. And it says in the play, in the play script, it says, clap something about, he claps his wings upon the table, and with a quaint device the banquet vanishes. I'm paraphrasing. Well, the juice of that scene is making these three men look into themselves and realize how horrible it was to set a man and his two-year-old daughter adrift on a boat to die. It's not about Ariel's wings. Mm-hmm. We get the same effect without needing a fancy effect. The play was probably first done indoors at the Blackfriars. They probably had some clever way of getting the food to disappear, right. And people get so focused on that, you know what, you don't even notice it, because here's this harpy with claws that are 10 feet long in our play going, you are three men of sin, if I may paraphrase, you suck really badly and you should suffer. and that's yes, it doesn't, it then becomes less about the quaint device, yeah. and more about look into your souls, you right. creeps, you did something horrible. So we take it as a suggestion. And some of them we embrace, and some of them, the dramatic necessities, we move on.
So we're talking about The Tempest, and let's talk about your two characters, Prospero and Caliban. And as you have said, those are characters who've had a lot of baggage put onto them by yeah. the not only productions but literary critics over the decades and centuries. Right. So, going back to the text, going to your right. entrance into this character, who's Caliban?
So the first thing I want to say is that the sort of method of going back to what's actually in the text itself is something that's common to all of the productions the Society does. I mean, this is how we approach all of Shakespeare. And in some ways, being aware of all of the baggage in between Shakespeare's day and now is important in terms of understanding what mistakes not to make, and actually looking back at the text and finding out, you know, what's actually in here, what's justified and what's not. And a lot of times, because of some references that are often taken out of context, Caliban is portrayed as a fish monster, you know, because he's called a monster, he's portrayed often as a weird monster. There was a production,
two-headed dog,
he
was a two-headed dog because
a mummy in one production at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, mm-hmm. which was just ridiculous.
I saw that one.
Yeah, yeah, and he's not. He's you know, and also the references to that. The descriptions that Prospero uses of him as, you know, sort of demon-born, is often taken literally, as if he's, you know, some sort of spawn of the devil. And there's not really much evidence for that in the script at all. Caliban is, he was the son of an Argerian witch. She was kicked out of Argiers, which was a pirate town, because she was too bad and horrible for pirates. And the only reason
that's
they didn't kill her,
it's pretty bad.
You might call her demon born.
It's about character. It's
right.
not about
the literal
sort of literal spiritual yeah. inheritance. But she would and she would summon demons. And the chief of which was a demon called Setebos, which was there's an interesting tradition from that period of there was a funeral ritual that explorers during that period had observed with, and I can't remember which tribe it was, but there were people dressed up as these tribal gods, and the explorers at the time thought they were demons, and the chief of them, the largest of them, was they called Setebos, and so he put it in this play. So, Caliban is just her son. She was not killed. She was stranded on this island
Because
she was pregnant. And that's another thing. Like, mm-hmm. we looked at the various interpretations for it. Like, there's all this ridiculously pointless scholarship about why she wasn't killed, you know, and all of them eschew the obvious that she wasn't killed because she was with child.
And yeah, and Prospero actually says that. For one thing she did, they would not take her life. Is not this so? And Ariel says, yes. this blue-eyed hag was hither brought with child, and here was left by the
right
sailor.
There.
Says it right there. But, of course, Victorians, having not much to do, except lay about their parlours and eat bonbons and read Shakespeare.
It can't be about sex.
No, about Victorians. Sex. There is no sex in Shakespeare.
So, but he's basically, and it's a little vague in the text, but at some point during the 12-year span that... that Caliban was on the island before Prospero arrived, Sycorax died. So he was, and we made the decision in our production that he was about 5 when that happened. And I did a lot of research about feral kids. He's feral. You know, he was taught the rudiments of language. It's obvious because he was able to pick up language later, although not that, you know, Shakespeare would have known a whole lot about feral children.
No, he wouldn't, but there was Shakespeare had a great instinct because he grew up in the country and he watched animals learn.
Right.
And I believe, you know, there's nothing, if only Shakespeare had known he would be worshipped as a demigod 400 years after his death, he might have left us a diary.
Right. Or he might not have.
Or he might not have. He's probably enjoying it on the other side. Oh, look at those idiots wasting all their time. But there is no better examiner, commenter, and reflector of the myriad and infinite differences in human nature than William Shakespeare. I have never seen, I mean, I'm fairly well read for a non-St. Johnian, and when you pick up these just simple moments, hast thou which art but e'er a touch, a feeling of their affliction, just the simple to be or not to be, the way he words things in a very complicated way, and then he breaks it down to a simple thing, he got Caliban on some level.
Yeah, no, he absolutely
He absolutely did.
And he's this, you know, he was running with the animals for a long time, and there's a sense in which he was devoted to Prospero before he tried to rape Miranda. And
that's
Prospero
often
was devoted to him.
And that's, a lot, often that's often ignored shied and shied away from, too.
But there's a sense in which, you know, Caliban looked on him as the father, you know, that he never had, and his mother, I suspect, was not a pleasant mother, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, if pirates kicked her out, nurturing could she be?
No, and she was probably using him in all sorts of horrible rituals.
Well, yeah, we have, you know, we don't want to extrapolate too far.
Yeah.
But we are aware of what was known and believed about magic in Elizabethan and early Jacobean England. And it was a vast network.
Yeah.
You know, Prospero was like a good magician. Because the whole aim of magic and alchemy was to get closer to God. That was seen as good magic. And there was the dark magic that Dr. Faustus does, Christopher Marlowe.
And that Sycorax would have done.
Yeah. Well, she would have been low magic, though.
Yeah.
She wasn't actually binding Satan or Mephistopheles to her. She's binding Setebos. She's binding tribal gods and demons and things like that. So it's fascinating.
We made the choice, too. I'm using... a kind of oversimplified almost face paint, war paint, and which is a reflection of what I would have seen during those rituals, and then I have a fetish necklace and all that sort of stuff that would have been left over from her. So there's all those sort of hints of that kind of magic, and there's a sense in which, Prospero was kind of his rescuer, but then when things turned, he went back to his tradition. And there's part of him, too, that's still a beast, that's an animal, and wants to be that. You know, that's what he wants. You know, he doesn't... the civilization is... All the stuff that he's learning is, in some sense...
You gave me language.
Yeah.
What's the line?
Yeah.
What does he use?
You taught me language, and my profit on it is I know how to curse.
Right.
So... You know, I mean, there's a way in which he resents it all.
And the next line.
The red plague rid you for learning me your language.
Yeah, exactly. I reject
what
you've given me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a wonderful moment in the play, in the beginning of the play, where Caliban goes on about, well, you screwed me over. You took my kingdom. This is mine by my mother.
Yeah.
And Prospero's like, I lodged you in my own cell until you did seek to violate the honor of my child. So, and people always shy away from that. I dare any father out there in radio land to sit there and calmly say, yeah, if a guy tried to force himself on my daughter, I'd treat him like gold.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about The Tempest by William Shakespeare. And it's happening this Friday. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday through the 16th of August at 6 o'clock every evening under the turquoise sky. That's open-air theater. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, it's in a courtyard, and we do have a covered performance space. If it rains torrentially, we can move in there. But it is. It's just beautiful. It's very intimate. So it in a way, it really reflects the globe and the Black Friar.
And this is in the courtyard at the Monte del Sol Charter School. It's 4157 Walking Rain Road. Now, one of the things that you were doing, I don't know if you're still doing this, is allowing people to use social media during the performance.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As long as it doesn't make a noise.
Yeah, please.
Or a flash. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, right. Flash won't make any difference. It's just sun's in everybody's eyes on stage, so flash is fine. Yeah, we encourage it, actually. We were inspired by a company whose name... the whole thing escapes me right now, but I was reading a little book that a friend passed to me about some real guerrilla Shakespeare in Chicago, and they were saying, well, we allow social media. Now, they allow cell phone calls and things like that during the show, and that's no thank you for us. But they also do their Shakespeare in a bar and encourage people to get drunk during it, and no alcohol on the Monte del Sol campus. But it's wonderful because before we had finished our first... show, we had these fantastic reviews and pictures that we hadn't taken all over social media. It was so exciting. So please, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And it's in our curtain speech too. It's just like, please go ahead and do those things, just don't disturb anyone around you.
Right, exactly. For more information, you can call 505-490-6271. info@sfshakespeare.org is the email, and sfshakespeare.org is the website. Now, anything else that you want to let people know before we go?
You can bring a picnic lunch.
6 o'clock in the evening. I'm calling that dinner.
Yeah, if you want. Well, for you, perhaps. For those of us who don't get to eat till then, sometimes it's breakfast. Yeah, bring a picnic basket, if you want. There are picnic tables. We provide the seats. Bring an umbrella because we will work through light rain. Dogs, unfortunately, we can't allow. The school campus says no alcohol, no dogs, no tobacco. So we have to respect that. They're being very generous and letting us use their space. It's 2 hours. You're done by dusk. It's not even till 8 o'clock. It's slightly short of 8 o'clock. And it's so much fun, and it's so exciting when the kids are there. They get the monster, they get the scary guy, they get the fairies, and I guess the harpy is a monster,
it
so we could
monster.
Say that. Wow. And it's great fun.
Yeah, and that's something to really emphasize. Bring the kids because you think Shakespeare's not accessible to kids, it really, really is.
No,
the
really.
Language stuff just.
And there's also I just want to mention too. There's we met this wonderful artist named Aubrey Schwartz who provided masks for us, and they're beautiful. They're gorgeous little masks that we use for.
And you
the
can,
spirits.
If you'd like to, you could. We're auctioning them off at the end of the show. So,
but
everybody's volunteering them in the the Santa Fe Shakespeare Society. We're completely nonprofit, and. We just all do it for the love of it. I mean, Robert and Deb Denard have gone way over. Dennard Denard have gone way over there, making the sets. And people have donated sheets that we can rip up and turn into things. And
Ambrose who donated the
Ambrose Ferber who donated the swords for the show. It's been a community thing because we are the Santa Fe Shakespeare Society. And that the society is so important.
Jerry Faraccio is director, and Prospero Quinn Mander is co-director and Caliban. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.